ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 शुशुषो
षधानस्य
वासुदेव तथा रुचिः स्यान् महत् सेवया विप्रा पुण्या
तीर्था
विषेवनाथ
शुशुषौषधदानस्य
वासुदेव कथा
रुचिः
स्यन्महत् सेवया
विप्रा
पुण्यतीर्थनिषेवनाथ शुशुषौषधदानस्य वासुदेव कथा
रुचिः
स्यन्महत् सेवया
विप्रा
पुण्यतीर्थनिषेवनाथ शुशुषौषधदानस्य वासुदेव कथा
रुचिः
स्यन्महत् सेवया
विप्रा
पुण्यतीर्थनिषेवनाथ
शुशुषौ.
One who is engaged in hearing. Shraddhanasya. With care and attention. Vasudeva.
Vasudeva.
In respect to Vasudeva.
In respect to Vasudeva.
Katha.
Katha.
The message.
The message.
Ruchi.
Ruchi.
Affinity.
Affinity.
Syat.
Syat.
Is made possible.
Is made possible.
Mahat Sevaya.
Mahat Sevaya.
By service rendered to pure devotees.
By service rendered to pure devotees.
Vipraha.
Vipraha.
O twice born.
O twice born.
Punyatirtha.
Punyatirtha.
Those who are cleansed of all vice.
Those who are cleansed of all vice.
Nishevanat.
Nishevanat.
By service.
By service.
Translation. O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the message of Vasudeva. Purport. The conditioned life of a living being is caused by his revolting against the Lord. There are men called Deva or godly living beings, and there are men called Asuras or demons, who are against the authority of the Supreme Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita 16th chapter, a vivid description of the suras is given, in which it is said that the suras are put into lower and lower states of ignorant life, lower and lower states of ignorance, life after life, and so sink to the lower animal forms, and have no information of the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. These asuras are gradually rectified to God consciousness by the mercy of the Lord's liberated servitors, in different countries according to the Supreme Will. Such devotees of God are very confidential associates of the Lord, and when they come to save human society from the dangers of godlessness, they are known as the powerful incarnations of the Lord, as sons of the Lord, as servants of the Lord, or as associates of the Lord. But none of them falsely claim to be God themselves. This is a blasphemy declared by the Asuras. And the demoniac followers of such asuras also accept pretenders as God or his incarnation. In the revealed scriptures, there is definite information of the incarnation of God. No one should be accepted as God or an incarnation of God unless he is confirmed by the revealed scriptures. The servants of God are to be respected as God by the devotees who actually want to go back to Godhead. Such servants of God are called Mahatmas or Tirthas, and they preach according to particular time and place. The servants of God urge people to become devotees of the Lord. They never tolerate being called God. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was God himself, according to the indication of the revealed scriptures. But he played the part of a pure devotee. People who knew him to be God addressed him as God, but he used to block his ears with his hands and chant the name of Lord Vishnu. He strongly protested against being called God, although undoubtedly he was God himself. The Lord behaves so to warn us against unscrupulous men who take pleasure in being addressed as God. The servants of God come to propagate God consciousness, and intelligent people should cooperate with them in every respect. By serving the servant of God, one can please God more than by directly serving the Lord. The Lord is more pleased when he sees that his servants are properly respected, because such servants risk everything for the service of the Lord, and so are very dear to the Lord. The Lord declares in the Bhagavad Gita 18:69 that no one is dear to him than one who risks everything to preach his glory. By serving the servants of the Lord, one gradually gets the quality of such servants, and thus one becomes qualified to hear the glories of God. The eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of a devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. So here the point is, by serving the devotees, then one gains an affinity for hearing. So affinity for hearing is what we're trying to gain. This is what we want. But that affinity for hearing then is gained by this process, by serving the devotees. Then Prabhupada mentions here that there are many such devotees, and they are described in the scriptures. So these devotees then will then come and give us the inclination to worship the Lord. So this inclination then is aroused because the devotees themselves are engaged in the Lord's service. They are performing this service. And because they are performing this service, if we assist them, then we can also gain that affinity. It means you gain the qualities of those who you associate with. Because they have that quality, you can gain that quality. That's the principle. You don't know where anything is. You don't know what anything is. But by association, then you direct values. You create your values. Right? You may be doing whatever you do. You've never seen something before. You don't know. Then you associate with people who have a particular value towards that object. You will develop that viewpoint. You will develop that endeavor. Whatever it is. This is material or spiritual. It's the same principle. It'll function the same way. Is that we will establish our values by our system of association. This is just how it works. So here then the sages, because they're interested in what's the highest welfare, the highest activity, the highest benefit, therefore they are asking, how do we get to that stage? So that stage is attained by associating with the pure devotees. Then we will actually be able to appreciate the transcendental subject matter. Right? Sutta Goswami has already stated this Bhagavatam is the very means of conquest. It's by this that we will attain to the transcendental platform, we will cross over the material energy, we will actually perfect ourselves as human beings. It is the means. But then to have that faith that this is the means, then that is gained by association. So without that association, then it doesn't come. That's the principle. That's why Sadhu Sangha is considered one of the main principles. In fact, it's the first. Right? Without Sadhu Sangha, we don't know what is chanting Hare Krishna. We don't know what is Bhagavatam. We don't know what is deity worship. We don't know what the Holy Dham is. So by association, we gain that. Therefore, it's considered the first principle. Sadhu Sangha starts the whole thing. So we see here is that first it's been established that worship of the Lord is our goal. Right? That's what we want. So hearing about the Lord is what we want to do. But the method we will gain that desire to hear is through association. Right? In other words, the processes, they nourish each other. Right? It means you have a relationship. That relationship has a purpose. that relationship will be expressed through a particular medium. By expressing that, then you get the goal. By that, you become more fixed in what is the relationship. When that is there, you're more inspired to perform the activities that enhance that relationship. Does that make sense? So in other words, the relationship itself is enhanced by the activities of the relationship, and the activities are enhanced by being more firmly fixed in that identity of the relationship. So our goal is to please Krishna, to worship Krishna, to be absorbed in Krishna, to have that love for Krishna. But that is established when we identify as servants of Krishna. If that establishment is not there, how are we going to do? So how do you get that you identify that, so that you want to hear? It is through association. So by associating and serving the devotees, then we gain the desire to hear. By that, then we're fixed more in our identity as servant of the Lord and His devotees. Then we will serve more. So the two go hand in hand. This way then the establishment of the association of devotees, though it is part of the process, it establishes our desire to hear, because desire is our relationship. We'll desire something only because we have a relationship with it. You don't desire something that you don't relate to. Right? First you have to see that you and what you're dealing with has a commonality. Then there's a desire for it, or to interact with it. Otherwise, there won't be. You don't desire anything you don't relate to. So that's the first thing, is relationship. You relate to it, then you have desires within that realm. You don't relate to it, you do not desire that. So if you don't relate to the process of devotional service, you do not desire to do it. Right? So if devotees don't desire to associate with other devotees because they don't relate to devotees. Right? They don't desire to hear the glories because they don't relate to the glories. What will it do for me? If I study the books, what will it do for me? What's the benefit? If I hear a lecture, heard that, been there, done that, okay, we're not the body, we're supposed to worship Krishna, we're supposed to chant, yeah, okay, what else? What new? We want something fresh. Right? So therefore we don't relate. And then because of that, we don't want to hear. So anything that you don't, that's proper, that you don't have a desire in, is because you don't relate to it. So then the question, how to relate to it? So one has to see the value of it. At least first is here, it's taking the core thing, is that there has to be the goal that serving Krishna, hearing about Krishna is your goal. If that's in place, then it has to be seen that the Lord accepts that service through the devotees. That is to Him the most important. When we're serving the devotees, then we get the best, we get the most interest. The most, it comes up in our heart. It awakens in our heart. Because it's natural. That's the thing, is that the process is not something you have to put in. It's a matter of awakening it. But you only awaken it if there's an interest in it. Right? So that's the easy part, is once we have the desire for it. But that means we have to relate. Relate means we have to contemplate. We have to contemplate, well, what will this do in my life? What is it going to do for me? And when we see what it's going to do for you, then we endeavor. Otherwise, you see people are endeavoring for things that they think will get them something that they value. Right? Something they relate to. No one's endeavoring for anything that they can't relate to and they don't think they're going to get a benefit out of. Right? And it won't happen. You may half-heartedly engage in something because it's indirectly connected to some other value. Okay, you have a value that, you should listen to authority, and the authority says you should do it, but you don't understand why, but you're doing it only because the authority said. But it's still based on something, you have a value. You can relate to authority, so you're doing it. But the thing itself, you don't have a value for. So either directly or indirectly, something is done only because there's a value. So that's the point. So now, those values are given to us, or these things are given, by the Lord's devotees. So here we see in the purport how Prabhupada is mentioning, he's mentioning those who have come. he says here. These surahs are gradually rectified to God consciousness by the mercy of the Lord's liberated servitors in different countries according to the supreme will. Such devotees of God are very confidential associates of the Lord. When they come to save human society from the dangers of the godlessness, they are known as powerful incarnations of the Lord, as sons of the Lord, as servants of the Lord, or as associates of the Lord. So he's given four different ways that they're coming. Incarnations of the Lord, like Vyasadeva or Prithu Maharaj or the Kumaras or Narad Muni, these ones, they are counted as incarnations because they're carrying a particular potency of the Lord. Then our servants of the Lord, they come down as the Acharyas, like that, associates. Then we see the associates are preaching, but they generally come, they're known as associates generally when they come with the Lord, but at the same time as they come outside that, generally in these other categories. And then as sons of the Lord, then, like that, at least in present day, then one personality is taken very strongly as son of the Lord. But we see here the demoniac, then they claim to be God, or claim someone else who is not God to be God. So even though we see that the son of God, they're coming in that form and known as the son of God, then he is performing his activities and preaching, but then the demoniac mentality then claims that he is God. So this is a problem. Right? The scriptures said that there will be somebody who will come and he will teach the actual purpose of the religion. That person came. Some recognized him, some didn't recognize him. Those who recognized him then continued in their practices, and with this new, vision, new angle, to perform it with some affection, with some devotion, rather than just as ritual. Those that didn't, then they went on with their ritual. But then with time, then the religion that he came to establish was dropped. And they created a new religion, taking elements of paganism, this, that, and putting it together. And then, in the meantime, then they decide he's God. So we can see they left actually the path, so they weren't following the religion he gave. And not only that, then he turned from son of God into God. So then it takes on the demoniac mentality. So this then shouldn't happen. And then we see also then there are people who claim to be incarnations, claim to be God, this and that. So that's also another bogus element of personalities who waste people's time. So that's also coming from the demoniac element. And then you have those who don't claim religion at all and claim to be God, that they will, do some play around with some DNA or with some atoms, and this way then they will create or influence life and all this, and then this way then they are God, or they play a nice guitar and they say they're God. So whatever. So like this, then in some way the demoniac mentality is there. So we can see is that the principle is that those devotees never claim to be God. They're always servant of God. And the example is given of Lord Chaitanya. So he came to perfectly show how the devotee acts. So he would not accept, even though he is God, because he was in the mood of a servant. Therefore, in that mood, you don't break the mood, so therefore he's not God. Like that, because mood is also important. You can bring mood into the prominence. Right? Generally, you would take the fact. You would take the thing itself. Right? You would take the particular item, or the noun would be the main point that you're trying to make. Right? Somebody is doing something. So that somebody, that is the main prominent point. And then what they are doing, then that is supporting that. But then sometimes is that what they are doing can become prominent. Right? So that's known as bhavavacya, means the bhav or the mood becomes prominent. Because the activity carries a mood. It's not just an activity. it carries a move that it's doing, because you can't take just an existence and make it prominent. You take the activity and make it prominent. So then that's bhava. So when Lord Chaitanya is, even though he himself is God, right? You know, not only is he a, you know, how you say, he's the ultimate, how you say, the supreme noun, right? Because he is the source of all persons, all places, and all things. So, but he's taking the mood of his devotee. So that becomes the prominent element. That becomes upta. So then that is what there. Otherwise, you change the voice of what you're expressing. Right? You change it. It becomes just like an active voice, you know who is doing the activity. Passive voice, you can hide who's doing the activity. You can say, you know, how you say, this person A hit person B. So that's active. It's obvious. Okay, person A has done the activity. But you can also reverse that and say person B was hit. Then you have to ask by who. Then you change it and reverse it from passive into active. So the point is, when it's passive, then it stays in that mood. Otherwise, it changes the mood. So if Lord Chaitanya takes the mood, I am God, it changes the whole mood. So he very rarely did that. He did that in the Mahaprakash Leela. So then at Srivast Thakur's house, then he took up the mood. I am God, yes. And he went up there and pushed the Shaligrams out of the way. You know, because they're his expansion, so it's like he gets first choice of seat. You know, you know, they can take what's left. You know, so he sits down there, and then he accepts the worship for 21 hours. Like that. But very rarely he did that. Sometimes. But then it was also for a mood. It would also be for a mood. Like that. Because the devotees wanted to worship him in that way, then he would take on that mood. Or that we would see the, how you say, he took the mood of Varaha, you know, he lifted up that water pot, did that. So it's to taste that mood. So even Godhead perform, he has his different forms because of the mood. So the mood therefore becomes very important in which it's done. So the mood of being servant, that is the prominent element. And because of that, that is very dear to the Lord. The Lord, for him, it's dear being in the mood of servant, right? Being God, that's nice. Vaikuntha, he's God. But in Dwarka, it's known he's God, but he's servant still. Because Ugrasena is the king, and he's assisting, and Balaram's his elder brother, and he's, you know, assisting, and all these different things, then that assisting element is there. But in Vrindavan, then he's the enjoyer, but at the same time, as he enjoys through that service. You know, he enjoys through serving the devotees, right? We always hear very prominent the element of Krishna carrying Nanda Maharaj's shoes, or they ask him to bring something because he's so small, and go up to it and try to lift it, but he can't, so he'll just stand there and wave his arms. You know, so then it's very cute. So everybody's happy, you know. Like that, or the mothers will say, you know, ask him to dance and he'll dance for them, or he'll do different things. You know, they'll ask him questions and he'll interact with them. So he likes to please the devotees. But in that pleasure, naturally, he is the enjoyer. But that mood of service is there, and it's so dear to him that therefore he comes as his devotee, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so in that mood, then we see is the devotee, even though they are representing the Lord, there may even be an incarnation in that they are empowered representatives, still they place themselves as servants, you know, like that. Or you have Balaram, even though he is Godhead himself, he takes the mood of servant. So that mood of servant is very important. So they never take this mood of God. So that service then, by that mood, then the interest to hear is there. Because who are you serving? Then you want to hear about who you're serving, right? It's natural. Who you are dependent upon, who you're serving, that's where you're going to discuss. So if we're dependent upon the Lord, dependent upon the devotees, then we'll discuss. The devotees are talking about the Lord. We are dependent upon the devotees, and we'll be talking about the devotees and the Lord. So that's more dear to Krishna than that direct service to Him. Because then the devotee, the Lord wants to be pleased. The devotee comes up with a way to please Him. So that way he comes up with, that's what's dear to the Lord. Right? He can think of so many ways. He can be pleased on his own. But when the devotee decides, I want to please in this particular method, then that becomes very dear to Krishna. It makes him very happy to receive that service. So then if we assist the devotees in that service, then we become dear to the Lord. Right? So this mission, it is Lord Chaitanya's mission, but that is taken up by Srila Rupa Goswami. Right? Lord Chaitanya has an anxiety that the people are not going to be saved. Rupa Goswami says, I'll do it. So then those following in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami then become very dear to the Lord. And then those predicted, you know, in the scriptures, then also of that, then there will be a prominent personality who will establish this Lord Chaitanya's movement in the future. And so then we see is that after 500 years this would happen. Right? So then the mission has been established very clearly, very strongly. And all others who also are successful are using the same methods. In fact, they're using the people trained by the founder. And therefore they have success. So then assisting that founder in the mission, then one becomes very dear to the Lord. So that is the position. One has to have faith in the scriptures and faith in the mission of the devotees. If one does, one moves forward. If not, then we see it's due to the demoniac mentality. Because if we're not serving the Lord, then what will we be doing? We'll be taking care of ourselves. Who are we? We're, of course, God. Because we're the controller and the enjoyer. Right? So that's the point. Is that these are the options. Devotional service, following in the footsteps of the devotees, or our own speculative, you know, demoniac mentality. These are the two options. You know, you don't have a third option. Right? That's what the scriptures are giving us. They're just saying this is what you can do. There's the divine and there's the demoniac. So there's not somebody in between. Right? You know, so these are the two principles. So the devotees accept the Lord, the non-devotees don't accept the Lord. And so that is the point here. And then by doing that, then says here, the conclusion is, okay, here. By serving the servants of the Lord, one gradually gets the quality of such servants, and thus one becomes qualified to hear the glories of the Lord. It means we have to be qualified. If it's a matter, we're thinking, oh, I'm not so interested, it's actually, no, you're not so qualified. You know, like the person says, I quit. No, you're fired. Like that. So it's just a matter of ego. Oh, I'm not so interested. Yeah, but the real reality is the reason you're not so interested is because you're not so qualified. If you were qualified, you'd do it. Like that. The eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. So if we want to go back to Godhead, we have to be eager to hear about the Lord. And so that eagerness is then gained by gaining the qualities of the devotees. So that is gained by serving those devotees. So then if we assist Srila Prabhupada in his mission, then we will gain that eagerness. Like that. So then that is what we have to see, is that what we're doing is what is pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. Any questions, comments, or yes?
You mentioned about how Lord Jesus Christ brings the preacher system of religion. But this system of religion was perverted by the asuras, the demonic people. Now my question is, what can we do to avoid this to happen to us? How can we protect the Prabhupada society from this?
How to protect the society from the same kind of deviations is, well, one has to be determined to follow the instructions. At the same time, one should be knowledgeable, because the difficulty is that determination may be well meant, and if it is pure enough, then it'll work. But there's the tendency is that there's also, one is dealing in the realm of material need, then what may happen is we become distracted by the mind, because one will see is that there's certain things that are very obvious based on, you know, contemporary material perception. And if something is described in that way, then many times the mind will accept that over something that is much more subtle. So then what happens is we become deviated. Just like our philosophy is the Chinta Beda Abheda Tattva. You have to simultaneously be able to accept and be able to apply two contradictory principles at the same time in the same place. That's what gives it its refineness and subtlety and its supremacy. The tendency is to just take one or the other. Right, so that throws it actually into other sampradayas. Does that make sense? The other sampradayas are, it's one, so that's easy. Or it's two separate things, that's easy. Or it's one, you can look at it as one, or you can also look at it as two. But you're never looking at it as one and two at the same time. Right? And then two of them take it as, it's one, but we're defining what one means. Right? We're not taking one as existence. We're taking one as mood. Right? So those are more easy to catch. So then, you know, you'll have, you know, certain things, and they'll just, it's seemingly logical. Right? It's like, okay, you have the flower, and then Nectar Devotion says that you should touch the flower to your head, then smell it. So therefore, when I take the flowers around to everybody, I should touch it to everyone's forehead, then stuff it up their nose. Right? And so it seems very logical. Right? But, you know, but then that's all that's seen. One is that a corollary rule to that is that you must stick it into their nose when they're chanting, so that the outward breath is going out and there's no possibility of actually smelling it. You know, that's another, you know, side rule. So all these make somehow or another a lot of sense to the material mind. Right? So you see, something like this can expand through the movement in weeks or months. And the whole movement, though they've never done it before, it's like written in stone, even in the newest bhakta. But certain principles that were established, you know, by Prabhupada before, even to this day are ununderstood and aren't followed. One or two will follow. Like I saw, I know of one temple out of our 350 that the Guru Puja, they finished the Guru Puja and do all the kirtan down at the Vyasasan. You know, if we're taking it, Prabhupada's there and we're worshipping in this time, then the whole kirtan was there. When Prabhupada was here, no one ever, not one person ever left the Vyasasan and did kirtan down in front of the deities. Never happened. Never. But nowadays, that's the standard thing. And if you ask why, oh, we want to see the deities. Okay, then, seeing the deities, you saw the deities, then you left the deities, now you're going back. Now you're leaving the acharya and going back there. So, is the Jai Shri Krishna and the Hare Krishna part of the Guru Puja Kirtan or not? Right? If it's not, then where was the break to show that it's not? Right? And if it is, how do you leave the Vyasasan? But just this simple thing, oh, we want to see the deities. And that's it. Everybody in the world accepts it's gone. So like that, you can see so many things that were established that don't, because it's subtle. You want to make a break between two things, there has to be something to break it. But I only know one temple, and they have to fight like anything with all kinds of other senior devotees, that this is the way we used to do it in Prabhupada's here, and this is the way we're going to do it. And you want to do it the way you like in your temple, go ahead, we don't care. We're not bothering you, so you leave us alone. As I mentioned, I said, you're the only temple that still follows what we used to do in the 70s. And they said, yes, we know. And we get a lot of trouble for it. You know? So many different things come up like this. It's so simple. But that solution's not there. You know, you have the thing of the principle. Okay, the men are senior to the women. Okay, so everything goes through all the men, then it goes over to the women. The Prabhupada establishes that's there is that your senior men who are leaders and your sannyasis, GBC officers, those who are accepted as leaders are there. Then the next group that's senior is the grihasthas. That includes their wives. Right? Then they go next to offer flowers. But that means with their wife. The wife doesn't go separately. She goes with the husband. Then after that, then you would have the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis. You know, so like that. That's how Prabhupada established it when they were doing the Vyas Puja. But it never spread beyond that because then the mind just latches on to, okay, men are senior to women. Okay, so that's easy enough. The other thing takes some complication. Right? It takes more arrangement. And because of that, then it has to go through all these things. Otherwise, you could easily split the flowers. You know, take half, send it to the men, half send it to the women. I mean, so many different things could be done like that, you know. So it's a matter of the mind latches onto one mundane point. And then from that, the whole value system goes. So one has to see that the principles on which you base why it's done is actually fitting the mood that the Acharya gave. So to do that, then one has to understand also the philosophy behind it. So by knowing the philosophy, by knowing the practices, by practicing them, by keeping good association, then one can keep everything pure. Otherwise, the tendency will be is mundane things will creep in, just like you have Gauranga Nagari, right? It's an upa sampradaya, where Lord Chaitanya is God, so being God, he's the enjoyer. Right? So it sounds, well, yeah, right. You know? And then you get an upasampradaya. Lord Chaitanya didn't come to be the enjoyer. He came to be the devotee. So they go completely against his mood just because they've said, hey, he's God. So the point is, but they try to please him as God. Rather than as God, he's taken the mood of the devotee, so we please him as God by pleasing him as a devotee. So they kind of miss that point. So like this, then you get all the upasampradayas are based on some mixture of something. Dardavesh, that's one of the upasampradayas, one of the 13. Dardavesh means you mix Vaishnavism with Christianity. Like that. So you have I think the only ones you really see practicing now are over somewhere, I think they're in Turkey or something. Nowadays people call, at least in English, they call them dervishes. You know, the whirling dervishes. But that's Vaishnavism mixed with Christianity. You know, Sahajiya is mixing it with certain elements of Buddhism. Just the Buddhist, there's that part of Buddhism, Sahaj, to make easy. So they've taken that and mixed it. And that gets the Sahajiyas. So it's Buddhism mixed with, you know, like that. So that's the whole thing. We have to be careful. As we mix these things, we end up with something else. You know, you go to some parts of the world, you don't see any of the traditional culture of Krishna consciousness. And it's not a problem if they're just living their life doing whatever they do. But the problem is they have to create a philosophy to rationalize it, because they know it's not in line with what Prabhupada's given. So one has to be very careful. If that's not corrected, they'll turn into upper sampradayas. You know? Or you change the philosophy, you decide only Prabhupada can be the initiating spiritual master, although every scripture goes against that. Right? And it's not that you're trying to please Prabhupada, otherwise you'd look at the volume of his work. Right? He said his books are the how do you say, the law. And letters you have to interpret in relationship to the books. Right? He says in the books what always applies. Letters he's applying at time, place, and circumstance. So say one thing to one person, another to another. It's all right, but it fits their situation how they should look at it. Even though it may seem contradictory. But the principles are maintained. So to throw out all the books and take one letter means you have to be highly motivated to do that. Right? Highly motivated. And what is the motivation? Simply to maintain absolute managerial control over the members of your temple, because it won't go out to anyone else other than no gurus or anyone else. The temple president becomes the guru. Though he's not qualified, doesn't want to be the guru, but he wants to have the authority and power of the guru, though he doesn't want to take the karma. Right? Prabhupada gets the karma, but I get all the service. So that's cheating. It's demoniac. So these are the difficulties. Is these elements are there, we just have to see that it's not there. The acharya said serve together. Our line, see, we in the Vrindavan line, you have a very unique element in that even though Krishna is the topmost, he puts himself under the devotees. And the assembly of devotees is more important. So you'll see is there is that the devotees needs to he'll be with the cowherd boys. They'll all decide how they're going to play. And sometimes they even dictate and Krishna just goes along with them. Right? And I think it's the cowherd, yeah, like that. So you see that with the cowherd boys, the cowherd girls, they call the shots, they make the rules. He follows their rules. You know, there's a problem with Radharani's upset what to do. He goes to Lalita. She tells him what he's going to do. Right? He follows that. You know? Or when he's very young, he follows what Mother Jashoda and the other gopis say he's going to do. He does that. So that element then is your top is actually servant. And the assembly of Vaishnavas is more important than the top. Because the top's, that means if the top is so important, the top puts its values in the assembled devotees. You know, as Prabhupada mentioned here, the devotees, following the devotees is more important than following him. So then, this throws a particular organizational structure onto even the spiritual institution. That you have your senior persons, you have the top, but at the same time, it works as a group. Does that make some sense? So, therefore, having a GBC is a braja form of management. Well, having a single acharya only, and that's it, that is your, you know, last word in administration, that's a Vaikuntha system. You understand? So then, those who acknowledge that the GBC is the method, that's they can get to Braj. Those who say there has to be one acharya, very difficult for them. So that's the interesting thing, is ISKCON, though its opulence is supposed to be just a, you know, second-rate, you know, sadhana, vaidhi, bhakti, you know, organization. But it's actually, the principles it's based on is that of spontaneous braja organization. While then the others who complain about this, they've accepted the Vaikuntha method. But they're supposed to be spontaneous. And ISKCON, though its foundation is spontaneous, it's supposed to be vaidhi. So these are the difficulties. It's not thought out. It just makes sense in the mind. But unless the mind is purified, by the association of devotees and we see how they see, then we can always be deviated. But the good point is that Prabhupada says that this, because it's ordained by the Lord, the mission will go on. So there'll always be the pure form of the mission. So it will happen. Now it's just a matter of who wants to take part and who wants to be pushed to the side. That's all. Yes.
What happens if the shikshaku and the teacher who have a bit on philosophy, and what happens if, say, for the world view, thinks the shikshaku has a better philosophy than the teacher?
So the thing of the siksha and diksha, it's because we're talking relationship here, it must interact. So the position of the siksha guru is dependent upon the authorization of the diksha guru. Does that make sense? Means someone can be your siksha guru if the diksha guru authorizes that, either specifically or in general. You know, in some way it needs to be acknowledged. Generally that would be the means, if as long as he's functioning. If he's not functioning, then the siksha guru becomes the proper. Means the connection's been made, but one continues. Does that make some sense? You know, it's just like your relationship to the family has been established with your father, but if your father is not functioning in the family, then you may take shelter of your uncles. And that's how you your continued inspiration goes on. But the, the connection's been made. You know, saying Pancharatra is a system, it's a samskar. So once done, it's done. You know, it's like a wedding. Once you're married, it's married. It doesn't depend upon the guru, the priest being still active or not. It's not that when the priest falls away or gives up devotional service, then you have to be remarried. So the Pancharatra system is the same. Once you've been connected, you're connected. Now, how you maintain that connection is through instruction. So the main siksha guru is the diksha guru, and that is supplemented by others. And if he himself says that he authorizes that someone else is more prominent, that you follow what they say, then if there's a difference, it doesn't matter. But otherwise, if there's a difference, then you need to confirm it with the diksha guru, because it may be there is no difference, just they're talking different time, place, and circumstance. You know? So therefore, it appears that it's different to us because we don't understand the higher principles that they're working on. But they do. So then the diksha guru will point out how it's not different. Or the siksha guru could point it out, if you have such that you can ask. But if there is an obvious difference, then you have to stick to the diksha, unless it's authorized to switch it to the siksha. Right? In other words, the siksha is always subservient, in this case, to the diksha guru, unless otherwise authorized. Does that make some sense? So that's the relationship. So the siksha guru will always be careful not to say anything different. Like that. And then here also we're taking who's acknowledged siksha gurus and who's in generic siksha gurus. Right? It means any preacher in the movement is a siksha guru for anyone in the movement, because they're the senior devotees, so therefore they will give instruction to anyone in the movement, because you've accepted shelter in Prabhupada's movement. So anyone that has a question about how to function within that movement, then they will answer. So they're automatically siksha guru. But at the same time, to be function on the absolute, that means, how you say, specifically for us, then that has to be a recognized thing, that both parties see it that way. Otherwise, you see it that way, they don't, then you take great advantage from what they say in that, but it's and they are a siksha guru, but it's not like sadguru. They're preacher siksha guru. So you have the preacher siksha guru, above that is siksha guru that's equal with the diksha guru, that's like sadguru. But then you have the founder. So the other two work under him. they don't work under him, then they can, you know, establish themselves on their own merit. They can't claim to. They can't claim that their position is based on the founder. Right? Does that make sense?
Don't we worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the supreme, as God?
We worship Chaitanya as God who's come as his devotee. Therefore, in dealing with that, then both elements are there. The devotees prefer to see Lord Chaitanya in his lila in Navadvipa as a grihastha. Because then it's as close as you can get to, you know, him being Vishai, you know, enjoying and being pleasant and all that. Same time as his mood is as devotee. So then one has to, therefore that's how we worship. Does that make some sense? He is God, but he's taken the mood of the devotee. Yeah, Mahabharata.
But how does that manifest, like in the temple, we worship him as
he, well, he wears devotee clothes. You know, he doesn't wear, you know, things that, like Krishna wears. He's not wearing skirts and all these other different kinds of things. He always wears dhoti and chadar. So that's as a devotee wears. On Ekadasi, then they eat Ekadasi, you know, prasad. You know, little things like that. Then it's, these are there. You know, because it's Pancharatri, so it's very formalized. But like that. Peacock feather is not even an issue in whether he's God or not. Because the cows wear peacock feathers, the cowherd boys wear peacock feathers, the peacocks wear peacock feathers. So peacock feather doesn't identify him as God. Peacock feather identifies him as Krishna as opposed to some other incarnation. But because we see all incarnations as Krishna, therefore our paintings where we have peacock feathers on Nisringadeva, but it's not wrong because we see him as Krishna anyway. Keshavadrita, Nadahari Rupa, Keshavadrita, you know, Kurma Shuri, Rakwi. So that's our vision. Others may not, but that's the way we see it. Like that. So that's not the big problem. He has made a determination to wear a peacock feather because he was defeated by Radharani in the form of a peacock. So therefore, to acknowledge that defeat, he always wears it on his head. Like that. But it's just a form of village decoration. The cowherd boys go along, they pick up peacock feathers, they put them on, you know, they find all these various, like, minerals, you know, various unguents and oxides, and they decorate themselves with them, and, you know, and flowers, and make garland. It's just part of village fun, you know, like that. So it's not that by wearing or not wearing that God or not, because the point is you take Bhav. I have never heard of in my life that if a girl wears a part of the clothing of the boy she's attached to, she thinks she is the boy. It only increases her meditation on the boy. So if the peacock feather is, you know, the symptom of God, and then him as Radharani wears it, she'll just think of Krishna more. So that as an element, as a determining factor in Pancharatrik worship, then is not, it doesn't even arise as a discussion. Though it's a popular thing to discuss about, but it's not, it doesn't have any foundation, yes.
You made an analogy with the guru and the priest. So if the guru is the priest, then the guru is the husband or the wife.
Means whatever the ritual is for. Means the disciple is the one who's the benefactor of the samskar. Just like you have a samskar, you have namakarana, then you have the person who it's being done for. So in a marriage, it's done for two people, you know, like that. I just use that because it's more common, because weddings are accepted universally. There's something like, you know, namakarana or jati karma or garbhadan. Sometimes they're not universally accepted by the devotees. So it's just, it's one that means, like Rupa Goswami mentions in the Natika Chandrika, that if you pick a theme for a drama, then you'll always get success if you pick conjugal or chivalry. You know, either kings or romance. Guaranteed audience. You pick another theme, you may or may not, you know, like, you know, not that many people are inspired and go see Waiting for Godot, you know, so like that is, but you pick, you know, Romeo and Juliet, you can, you're sure to pack house. You know, or King Lear, or, you know, stuff like this. You're assured of success. So that's why that becomes the most prominent features and all that. Is that okay? Anything else? Or?
Only one question. When you have many Siksha Gurus in the Yajnikam?
When you have many Siksha Gurus, yes,
and
then?
They are different.
They are different. See, is you still have to make some prominence. Point is you have to have something that's established, and then from there you have an order. It means there's a few ways you can do it. You can do it by this particular area of siksha is taken from this guru, and this another area of siksha is taken from another guru. Or you can take it that these are all your siksha gurus, but from among them, then this one is prominent. So all the others will be interpreted in terms of that person. You know, either way, like that. So in other words, if there's no overlap, then they have their own unique area. If there is overlap, then you have to establish which one is prominent, and then interpret the other according to that. You know, just like that's, like we take Bhagavatam as the prominent shastra. We interpret all other shastras according to the mood of Bhagavatam. So like that. Does that make sense?
So what if the disciple will go to another teacher, mainly because the guru recommends?
Yeah.
Like Vidai Chaitanya said to Krishna, Guru Krishna Das, go to Vrindavan and study and
meditate. Mm-hmm.
So he would tell him to accept the shiksha.
Yeah.
Not like the devotee is thinking that he's not satisfied with the guru and has to start looking for some
other shiksha. Yeah, it shouldn't be that it's a matter of dissatisfaction. It should be a matter of recommendation by the guru or a natural just attraction. They like certain elements or aspects of the devotee and that inspiration, then they confirm it with the guru that that's proper and everything. That they're not getting that, they're not getting it wrong. You know, they're not looking at it from a mundane point of view. It's just like the guru was so nice, he used to smile at them, and then after initiation now he starts giving me instructions and that restricts, cramps my style. And because I don't follow it, he stops smiling at me. But this devotee, he smiles at me, so now he's my siksha guru. Like that. You know, this, there are vast tracts of land where this is very prominent. So, you know, so then that kind of thing is mundane. Then the Diksha Guru can point out, or as a popular thing is you know, your guru means they'll quote from Krishna Bhajanamrita, that it's said that if the guru doesn't give authorization for you to study under another Siksha Guru, then because of that envy or jealousy of your Diksha Guru, then he can be, you don't have to take his authorization to study under that other guru. So then this is applied, meaning that you only are taking up that siksha from someone else. This is in the way of that you're replacing, where the other person becomes the prominent. Not that you're adding to. You know, there's two different things. One is that you're switching who's prominent. And the other is that you're adding to already what's already there. You have something nice, you're adding to it. So your Diksha Guru is prominent, and then there's so many other Siksha Gurus that add to that and fill it out for you. But then there's another where you actually switch who's prominent. So he's addressing that point. So that is, it's only done if what the Diksha Guru, you know, either is unable to or not inclined to instruct you further in an area that you need to be instructed in. Right? It means whatever you can gain from that Guru, you have gained. And now he gives you, now he says, now you continue this study under this devotee. Like that. So then that's the thing. So if he has come to the point where he cannot teach him anymore in that field, But out of jealousy that someone else can, he doesn't give that authorization. Then one doesn't have to, then one can still study from that Siksha Guru, because it's not based on a spiritual principle. But if there's so much more to learn, and you want to jump over the head of your guru, supposedly to go to someone supposedly more senior, that's not supported by Shastra. So that's a misapplication of the Krishna Vajramrita. That's quoted, you know. Because they'll say Raganuga is higher than Vaidhi. So therefore, then you should get your guru to say that you can take Siksha from the Raganuga guru instead of your guru who's only Vaidhi. So then if he doesn't give sanction, then he can be rejected. But the point is one is, have you actually learned everything from your guru in the realm of Vaidhi that it takes to actually get to the platform of Raganuga? Because Raganuga means that you're on the Madhyam platform. You can't be Raganuga below that. You can be interested in that direction, but you can't be established there. Because Rag means you're beyond Anartha Nivriti. Anartha Nivriti then is the last stage of the Kanista. So you have to be at least on Nishta to function in that capacity. Right? So then are you on that level? So that you first have to establish. If you've come up to the Madhyama platform and your guru doesn't want to get into details in that area and he'd rather someone else do that, then that switch takes place. That authorization is there. But if one is still neophyte and then one is claiming that now one will study on the Rag platform, that means one doesn't understand a philosophy. That's just sentiment. That's bogus. Like that. So that one has to see that element. Paul Fleston, you have to establish that the other person is on the Rag platform, that it's even worthwhile. This is just giving it as an example. May or may not be. You know, because you can claim so many things.
Yes. The devotee who has strong faith in Guru, and at the same time has the right attitude of Sharanagati, he will also attain a position.
Yeah, yeah.
Without even going through the studies.
Yeah, means if you have faith in Guru and Krishna, that unflinching faith, then automatically by devotional service and knowledge and detachment come. Mm-hmm. But that is based on that fact. And if you keep good association, you'll always go. That's why, even if one doesn't have the natural ability to get into technical points of philosophy, one can go back to Godhead, because whatever is needed will be revealed. My point before was, if one has the natural ability, or that is their interest, they do get into intellectualizing things. But instead of intellectualizing devotional service, they intellectualize some mundane thing from mundane literatures and viewpoint, they may become distracted because they're not actually fully engaged. It means they're partially engaged, but their body may be, but their intelligence is actually in another field. So what the intelligence does is what you speak, because you have body, mind, and words. So you can tell what the intelligence is into by what you speak. Right? So that means you're taking the body, the mind, the intelligence, and the ego. So the practical application of that is the body. That word is quite straightforward. The speech is the intelligence. Right? And the mind means the mind and how you identify. So that means your ego. So if the mind's engaged, means your ego's engaged. You know, the intelligence is engaged means your speech is engaged. Like that. So if you're speaking about Krishna, means you're thinking about Krishna. Like that.
People like the example of Srila Prabhupada, the complete dedication to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, complete dedication to preach.
Mm-hmm.
He don't even put so much emphasis in study the Raghunatha practice. He wants everybody to like die in the field, preaching. Mm-hmm.
But the point is it's, he's coming in from the platform of an eternal associate who's taking the Madhya platform. It's like this. Okay, Raganuga is a natural part of our philosophy, and you'll get there when you mature to that platform. Okay, now let's get down to getting to that platform. Right? But there are those who will discuss it so much but may or may not be doing it. You know what I'm saying? It's natural if one is new at it, someone who's coming up will discuss it more. Right? Just like married women will discuss less about the interaction between, you know, the romantic interaction between men and women than girls who are just engaged or girls who just figured out boys exist. It's natural. But the point is the mature platform is what do you actually have to do to get to that point? You want to get married, okay, great. What do you have to do to get to there? Talking about it's not enough. That's the principle. Talking's not enough. You have to do. So therefore, Prabhupada is doing. But if you actually know the rag platform, you'll understand that the principles he's given is functioning on that. Because externally, it's all sadhana bhakti, so you won't see any difference between the two. And whatever little difference there is, Prabhupada didn't give us. Right? Prabhupada means there are some rules that make the difference between Vaidhi and Raganuga as far as certain elements of ritual. He didn't give us the rituals that are exclusive to Vaidhi. So therefore, he's given us the sadhana bhakti that can function in either realm. So you can naturally move from one into the other. Right? Does that make sense? Yes, sir.
There was a time in the history of our society when Raganuga was decapitated.
Yeah.
And at that time, of course, there were many reactions to certain people's interest in the new public. And the majority of the reactions were, no, you have to be seeking sex life, no, you have to be beyond an archimedicity. And therefore I wanted to ask you if you had any thoughts with reference, because during that period I was investigating, and what I came up with was that there was one and only one qualification to pursue Ramanujati, and that is low. And also in Bhakti Samkirtana Bindu, Krishna Chakravarti also said that one may be qualified to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, and yet you still may have an
artifact. But that's the platform of Bhava, you meeting face to face, but those elements are there. It sees lobe means complete. So the problem is if there's material desire, then you'll only be that much connected to the rag platform. It means you have some greed, but that greed is only manifest, you know, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. So those 5 minutes, you may be functioning on the rag platform, but then the problem is the rest of the, you know, 23 hours, 50 minutes, you know, maybe not. So therefore, the Vaidhi then takes up that slack, and it progressively leads you to that platform, giving up those attachments, so then that greed can then take up where you've given up a material desire, then that means that can be filled with the rag. So there, it's a dynamic thing. It's not just a clean line that you're only rag or only Vaidhi. So that's why mentioning is that Prabhupada has established this in such a way is that anybody can get anything from it. And it's understood is that when the person, even on the platform of Shraddha, you know, he's deciding whether to get involved in Krishna consciousness, still he came to the temple, took the prasad, associated with the devotees, attended the kirtan, and there was some taste. So actually, the glimmerings of ruchi are happening at the platform of Shraddha. So, but it's just what is prominent. When the greed is the prominent element in the life, where that's basically all that's there, and the other things are secondary, then you call it Raganuga, even though the elements of Raganuga may be happening right from the beginning. Like somebody has a great attachment to doing kirtan, and only for the taste. That's actually Raganuga. But it's only happening there. But when it goes to another thing, let's say like washing pots, then it's Vaidhi. You know, it's just because the temple president said he's got to do it, you know, then he's doing it. You know, or getting up for Mangalarti. Some want to go see the deity, some don't. So the ones that want, and that's their purpose, is to go see the deity, not because it's the rule to go. then that's rag. So that's the whole point, is why the importance of the association of devotees, because somebody will have that rag in one area, someone in another area, someone in another. And so by that broad association, you get inspired by this devotee's kirtan, that devotee's lecture, this devotee's example, that one's humility, that one's, you know, preaching mood, that one's... And in that way, then, very quickly, one moves forward on that path of rag.
One time Prabhupada said, eating is best done alone. You can savor the taste of the
yeah.
He said, talking is best done with two. You can get into a deep, meaningful conversation with two. If there are three or four, it becomes one.
Mm-hmm.
So walking is best done with three. If one is lagging behind, then the other two are going, then he has to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
Not that one has to wait for the other.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions. Four. Decisions are best taken with four. And he said, in Krishna consciousness is best practiced because nearly as possible. You can draw upon the good qualities of all these
people. Yeah. Because that's the advantage. Because there's always somebody who's fired up about, even the newest devotees. See, each one kind of latches onto one thing. You know, you see the brand new, they've all just joined. But somebody's very enthusiastic in a certain service, like cleaning, another one, and talking to guests, another one, and the book distribution, another one. And, you know, so you'll see as each one has their unique quality. And by that, then you get caught up in the same thing, you know. So it's always... So that's the thing, when it's like, I find an interesting thing is actually is the rag is very natural. It's a natural flowing thing. But much of the time what happens is it gets put into a box, the raganuga. So technically, you know, you have to study these books. You have to take shelter of a rasik bhakta. But those are, you have to, is the, what is it, imperative mood, which means it's a rule, which means it's Vaidhi. You know what I'm saying? And because they're neophytes, they don't, and not actually in the rag platform, they just, because they use certain raganuga terminologies, they think that they're raganuga. But actually, it's a mood. If that natural attraction is there, that's rag. And if it's not there, then it's like in Vaikuntha, like the difference between the gopis and the being maid servants of the gopis and maid servants of the queens is simply whether that prema is based on rules or not. So even so, one is a Gaudiya Vaishnava and worshipping, but if the principle is on that level is attachment to the rules, then one will become a maidservant, definitely, but in Dwarka. You know? So that's why it's pointed out, the subtleties and the difference. You know, so that's the also interesting thing, is that they'll be describing rag, but actually they're describing Vaidhi. You know? And Prabhupada's description of it is just means you do it because your intelligence, you know, you should do it. It's either good for you, the Shastra said, or, you know, it's like this, it pleases to Krishna, and so therefore I should do it. So that's the thing, is when the intelligence is used, then that's Vaidhi. And when the intelligence is not the determining factor, the purity of the heart is such that the mind accepts that and wants to do it simply because it likes that, that becomes a rag. But still, here then the rag is not on its ultimate thing, because ultimately then it gets to is because you just want to please Krishna and this is how he's pleased. So then that even goes beyond. So that seems to begin at Apandas.
Yeah, you often hear the Lord say, oh, I have to go and do my puja. Puja?
Yeah, you know, it's like
No, because the motivation is that this is for me.
Uh-huh.
I will make spiritual advancements by worshiping Krishna. It's actually for me, it's not for the people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So then that's the element of Vaidhi. Then when it's like you're doing it to please Krishna, and the reason is we could say, well, the Shastra says you have to do it during the Brahma Muhurta, the Mangalarti. But their reason of doing it is that it's done at the Shastra says that because Krishna likes that. Krishna likes to have Mangalartik at that time. Therefore, I want to please Krishna. Therefore, I offer Mangalartik at that time. So, therefore, you get the differences. Even on the Madhyava platform, it can still be Rag or Vaidhi. That's the interesting, is that Rag can start early or it can start late. But, you know, at some point before Prema, it starts. Yeah. Well, it has to if you're going to Braj, you know. So, but one can take it right into Bhava Bhakti, you know, right in the beginning stages. At Brahma Bhuta seems to be where, because that's the ultimate Anartha Nivriti. So that's then where the clearest and most fullest form of rag is manifest. So then that's where you can say this is really Raga Nuga, because then you're really because you have the spiritual body that you can follow in their footsteps. It means they go down the path, you can walk behind them because you're there. Then you take it down, then it's by mood you can understand and appreciate, then that comes at the Nishta platform. Because then the sincere material endeavor has been removed from the heart. There still may be material endeavor, but it's subconscious. It's not your prime factor. Then you can say is at any point one comes in contact with devotional service, there's the element of rag, means giving up of anartha, means that you gave up, okay, you know, your material situation or material identity. So you can call that also anartha nivriti. So in that, then there may be a natural spontaneous attraction for certain elements of Krishna consciousness. So you'll see it all there. But generally we see, you know, Rupa Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada define it from its full form in the stage of bhava. And also, as you'll see, that they take it beyond, even into prema, that raga anuga then remains because you're following in the footsteps of those who actually have rag, which means Radharani, Mother Jashoda, Sridham, Sudham, Madhav Mangal, you know, Danishta. These are the ones that actually have the rag. So everyone else is rag anuga. They are ragatmika. But you can define it because you're in the fire of raganuga to the ragatmikas, then you are also ragatmika. So then some will define that from prema, it's ragatmika. But we see in Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion, he does it, takes it all the way through, because eternally you're going to be following in the footsteps, you know, of those who actually are ragatmika. But some will say, oh, that's just the translation or some other grammatical error, because what they're trying to do is push the definition, stretch it down and make that prominent, make the Madhyama platform prominent or even the Kanista platform prominent, when it's not. Those are simply expansions, because the Uttama platform or the Bhava platform, you are that. Means your mood has come to the point where your spiritual body can manifest, so that is you, either directly by birth or by meditation, depending upon, you know, how early it comes. And the others are, you have a glimmer. It's like the, how you'd say, you have the Arunodoy, the Ushodoy, and the Suryodoy. So Arunodoy means it's the slightest glimmer that you know you're a devotee. So there's some inspiration, there's some spontaneity, like that. Then Ushodoy, it's actually light. You can tell who you are, but you don't really, you're not situated there. And then Arunodoy, Suryodoy, then means it's actually risen. Your eternal form has risen in your heart. You are able to manifest that. So it's always there. Because even in Vaikuntha, there has to be some spontaneity. Otherwise, it's just too dry. But it's just that rules are more prominent than spontaneousness. So therefore, it's called Vaidhi. When spontaneous becomes more prominent than rules, then it's called Raganuga. So like that, that makes the difference. And like Dwarka, it's still considered as Vaidhi, but it has a lot of rag in it. Many times they're kind of dropping, you know, the emotions overwhelm the whole situation. But when they get too much or there's another person around to see, they pull them back. Like that. So the ultimate comes as Vaidhi. you know, is the value. Though there may be a lot of rag aspects to it. And in Vaikuntha, also we see from Gopa Kumara, there seems to be two levels. Those that can accommodate more and appreciate more of the natural spontaneity of the individual personalities, and those that, you know, the rules are it. You know, we see that discussion, that there was, Gopa Kumara was just relating to the Lord in a very spontaneous way, and so some said, this cannot be done. And others say, no, you know, he can do that, but, you know, he should adjust a little bit, you know, because he is in public, so he should, you know, like that. And you know, it could be done, but we wouldn't do it, but, you know, it's okay, you know. And so then Narad Muni had to come along and say, hey, you're in the wrong spot, you know. You know, so then, so we see is there's always the rag element has to be there to create the some that ever freshness has to come from the rag aspect, but it's just whether that rag is happening in the realm of the intelligence or the realm of the mind, like that. So that's the difference, is that vaidhi means it's in the realm of the intelligence, but there's spontaneity, and others it's that spontaneity happening in the realm of the mind, but the mind is still has the influence of the intelligence. It means you have to discriminate between rasa. You have to know what is appropriate for the rasa. Otherwise you get rasa bas. So you could say that's vaidhi, but it's not. It's just discrimination within the field. So you can tell the difference between what's appropriate and not. Like Rupa Goswami gives the example of the gopi who says, you know, all glories to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then embraces Krishna, you know, in a conjugal mood. So he says, this is rasa bas. You know, it means this all, you know, she was standing with folded hands, or say, you know, something about the son of, you know, Nanda Maharaj, and then, you know, like that. You know, so it's, he was just saying is that, they haven't come to that platform of purity yet. So by association with those ragatmika devotees and those perfected raganugas who are following those ragatmika, then they will catch the pure mood. Then they will come to prema. Like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
How does one go from vaidhi to rag when dealing with your japa? Because japa is a purificatory process, and your mind has to be pure.
Well, the chanting means you have the various levels of the chanting. See, the thing is here what it's talking about. The eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of a devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. Okay, hearing about God, that means hearing, you're going to, about the name, form, qualities, pastimes. The eagerness to hear about God. So now eagerness is actually a, how you say, a covered form of what he mentioned is lobha, greed, right? Is that to make it very clear, it's like, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, hey, we're Raganuga, right? Yeah, greed, lobha, right? You know, like that. So that's going on. But the point is those who are on that platform, then they have a greater vocabulary. Like that. So then Prabhupada can use eagerness, and that means raganuga. Like that. He doesn't have to say greed. Right? Like that. So he has so many words like that. That mean that. If you know the vocabulary, you know that you can read into everything here the raganuga, or you can read it as vaidhi. You know? And Jiva takes it even further. Then there's even more hidden meanings. Like he translates the first verse of Bhagavatam by syllable. And by that, then he establishes through that verse, it's explaining all of Krishna's pastimes. His whole ad from his appearance to disappearance in that time within that verse. In the first verse. Yeah, you never saw that? Oh, I've seen that a couple of times. He points it out is that because of the different terms there, then he will leave, go to the none of that, do this, kill Kamsa, all these things. And so he just takes it by the syllables and defines, it's a summary of the 10th canto in the first verse. So these are the hidden meanings. You have the direct, the indirect, and the hidden. So direct, you know, we may say, okay, this verse is talking about serving devotees, you must do. So it's a vaidhi. Indirect is there's the rag aspect. And then the hidden will be these things that you can see, that those who understand these things, then they know. Yeah, all this will come. That's what's so nice, is that one flows naturally into the other. That's what Prabhupada says, automatic. You just follow it properly in an authorized way, automatically all these things will come. But so it means you're active. So then someone will retort, no, unless you do something, it won't happen. No, you're already active. Means you're going by, there's two kinds of verbs. There's those that explain existence and those that explain the activity. Right? So if you're just existing in the thing, then yes, then there must be endeavor. But if you're following it properly, you're endeavoring, then automatically the other thing will come. You know, it's just like, if you put the vegetables in the pot on the fire, you know, and follow the recipe, then automatically you're going to get a cooked final preparation, right? You know, but then so it already includes activity, because if there's going to be interaction, it always has to be active. Means Atmarama is the platform of inactivity, existence. But Krishna has already expanded himself to create activity. So that point has already been crossed beyond. So it means that you're going to get anything has to be by activity. So then when you, in the chanting process, in the beginning it may be because I get purified. But eventually it comes is because I like chanting. I like the taste, but that means as we're purified, if we're attached to so many mundane situations, then naturally that's our identity, because situation is identity. Ego is situation. How do I situate myself within the cosmic creation? That's ego. I'm a devotee. Okay, so then I situate myself on the other side of Yuraja. You know, I'm this, that, somebody big, you know, I'm like that. Then we situate on this side of Yuraja. And then on that, then there's finer. Okay, which realm? Then within the realm, which rasa? Within the rasa, you know, who specifically are we following? So by serving the devotee, we automatically situate ourselves in that realm. Right? So if you want to get to these topmost platforms, this is the way to do it, by serving the devotees. So then that chanting, then we see is then that taste will come. But as we give up the identities of the mundane platform, the stronger those are, then the more it holds us back. Because it says you have to be qualified to hear the glories. So by associating with those devotees who are serious in chanting, then you will pick up that mood. And as Kiranash pointed out, is that you have to have that desire for it. Right? You don't get anything if you don't desire. Unless you have the desire to chant the Shuddha Nam, the desire to have a taste for the name, you're not going to get it. It'll be right there, but it won't happen. You know? I mean, eventually it'll happen, but it won't happen now. Because you have some other purpose. You're just chanting because you're supposed to. Okay, so then if you have at least the desire to chant because you're supposed to, then you'll get your 16 rounds done. That'll happen, because that's what you desire. But if you actually want to hear or taste, you know, then you have to desire that. So that's the point. That's why he says eagerness. So the whole key to moving forward quickly is eagerness. So even the method we use and we recommend to everybody is still the core principle of Raga Nuga Bhakti. Is that eagerness. Right. If that's there, you'll progress towards it. If it's not there, then by removing the other things, then it'll come, and by association, it'll start to happen, but it won't be very dynamic. You know. But at some point, you have to make the commitment, is this is what I want to do, this is what I want. You know, just like the gopis, when Krishna first blew the flute, they're in Vrindavan, which is the realm of spontaneity, but they were happy. Krishna blew his, you know, flute and all that, but when he's not blowing his flute, they're perfectly happy in their household affairs. You know, that they're happy taking care of all their little children and this and that, that they're satisfied. And so then when Krishna blows his flute, it awakens that desire that's rag. They want to go, but it's only rag. It's not purva rag. Purva means complete rag. So they can't get there. Because their rag is not complete enough to get them out past the door, past their fathers and husbands and brothers and sons. You know, because there is still that point, is that they value that relationship, and so it blocks them. Because as soon as they stand in front of them, they don't want to disturb them. Other gopis, they're serving their meal to their, you know, affectionate husbands, and just put down the pot and the spoon and walk out the door. You know, and they're all sitting there going, you know, where's she going? Right? You know, they decorate themselves. You wear a cloth on the top of your body. They just grab one, put it on. And so typically it would be the lower cloth would go on the top, and the upper cloth they put on the bottom. So, you know, they put on, you know, one earring, one, you know, cudgel on one eye, you know, things like this. So they were a strange sight when they first went out, you know. So, but that would give pleasure to Krishna, that they had so much attraction, that the attraction was more than even trying to beautify them to please him. Yeah, like that. So then they would go. But after Krishna had tasted that pleasure of them coming with such affection, then as they were walking, then she adjusted everything. So when they actually got to the point of the, you know, interaction, then they were dressed properly and completely, you know. Because their mood was to be that way. But they were unconscious of it, so they did. But those that got held back, then their rag wasn't complete. So the point is rag, okay, but it has to be complete rag. Because otherwise you can get stuck on that border just before Purva rag for, Haridas Thakur says, hundreds of lifetimes. You can be the great Baba Bhakta for hundreds of lifetimes and never progress actually beyond that point. You know? Because of that attachment to, I am the devotee and I am Guru of Vaishnavas. So that comes back to, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. It's just in its most purest form. Right? I am a devotee is your existence. I'm a guru of Vaishnavas means then you are the enjoyer of the relationship. Right? And so one of them goes back to, then, and both of them, it ultimately comes down to the point of, they both spring from envy. So then, is I am the devotee, right, is, then will be the, I am the devotee means I am the Ragatmika devotee, rather than I am the servant of the Ragatmika. Therefore, das anu das. That's what Krishna says. Someone says they're my devotee is not my devotee. He doesn't say they're my devotee, but they're not very great devotee. Greater than, he just says they're not my devotee. So he doesn't accept them as a devotee at all. Anyone who says direct. So that's because it's impersonal. Prabhupada says impersonalism is both. One is that I am God, and the other is that I am the devotee. So both have to go. So then that goes at this stage, these subtleties. So then that's removed from the heart. So that's burnt up by that, because then still what's left, what's burnt up is the reactions to their pious and impious deeds. So that then frees them. And then they can, then in that state of pure attachment, now they can go meet Krishna. So these elements are there. So the same principle that happens there is happening on the lower. Just there, it's the rag is prominent, but there's just one little point that's not there. But because it's the field of pure rag, therefore it's not enough. You know, if you're talking 100% rag, 99.9 is not pure enough. You know, it may be okay for a Krugerrand, but it's not enough for Raghunatha Bhakti. Right. So then But then on other levels, that's way beyond. You don't need that much. You get into Vaikuntha, it doesn't have to have that much. Or you come down into the other levels of rag, then it doesn't require that much. You know, I think Rupa Goswami mentions 6/10. That it means, in other words, the attraction is 60% and the materialism is 40%. Then one will be situated within the rag platform. But if it's less than that, then it'll still manifest as vaidhi. You know, it's not enough to carry it on and the spontaneous to be the prominent element. So it's raganuga, but same time as then there's the element of what's the real raganuga. Because you can take it at basically at four, like we said, four stages. You can take it already on the platform of prema, following in the footsteps of those who are the ragatmika bhaktas. You can take it within bhava, as one who has crossed Brahma-Bhuta, so therefore there are no more as such anarthas, because their material existence is finished, but there's still the fragrance of that in their consciousness. So still it's not pure enough. Then you have the place where predominantly they are situated on the platform of study devotional service. So it's the prominence in their mind, so you'll call it Raganuga. Or then just they are following in the footsteps of those who are on that platform of rag and have a natural attraction to do some of the aspects, even if it's just one. You can say that one is on that platform. Though because it's the one and then there's 99% of something else, you would say that 1% is rag, but you wouldn't identify their position as rag. So the point is anyone at any time can practice it, but if you want to say that's the prominent practice, you know, then you can't really say. You know, it's just like, let's say, you're preparing for cooking. And then cooking we're defining as applying, you know, in an appropriate way, applying heat to the substance you want to become cooked. Right? So now, let us say, so before we're just preparing for that, we're choosing the vegetables, cutting the vegetables, grinding the spices and that. But now to grind the spice, then it becomes moist, right, by the air, damp by the air. So we have to put it in a pot, put it on the fire, and stir it around until it warms up and dries out. Then only we can grind it into a powder. So then you can say, hey, I'm cooking. Technically, yes, you could say you're cooking, but because it's only a smallest part, it's not really cooking. It's that when you get now that ground spot and the thing's on the fire, then you can say it's happening. So it's just what is the prominence of it. You know, or to wash a pot. Sometimes you burn milk or something in the pot. You can't get it out. So you put some water in the pot, put it on the fire, turn on the fire and boil it. And by that boiling, then you'll loosen the thing. So you could say I'm cooking. You know, so there is, yeah, you could say, yeah, okay, but, you know, I'm not sure I'd want to eat what you're going to take out of the pot when you finish, you know. But, you know what I'm saying? So that's there. But in devotional service, then it's more, you know, it's a mundane example. But there, what little bit one is spontaneously attached to is real. But unless you get rid of the anarthas, even that can be covered. That's the point, is that until you get to the platform of prema, then that spontaneity could be covered. You know, you can fall from bhava. Bharat Maharaj fell from bhava. But his attachment to the deer is not, he's attached to little cute little deers. He's attached to that soul who identifies as a deer. And because they identify as a deer, you have to deal with them as a deer. And so then what deers accept as deer is what he deals with the deer. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. And so then he's attached to, because he's thinking that deer thinks is a deer, then if it gets lost, then it's in mundane consciousness, so it will be feeling the effects of mundane separation. He doesn't want that soul to... And because that soul then suffers, he feels that compassion, they shouldn't suffer. Therefore, then he thinks to go out and find it and relieve it from its suffering. But he's thinking on the transcendental platform. He's seeing the soul. But still, because he thinks of the deer, the mechanics of the material world work in the same way. As you leave your body, what you think of, that's what birth you'll take. Therefore, he came as a deer. But because he was transcendental, he was a transcendental deer. Does that make some sense? So the desire, that the strongest and quickest way to develop your chanting is by desiring to do it. Like that. So whatever it is, still that method is the prominent method, because bhakti means that. So pure unalloyed bhakti is the pure rag platform. Bhakti contains rag, though it has a form to it. Right? You know, some to structure it. And that the pure has a structure, but the structure becomes secondary. Right? In the other forms of pure bhakti, the structure is prominent, and within that structure, bhakti, plays. But in the other, is bhakti is independent of structure, and the structure serves, you know, that spontaneous devotion.
Mark, huh? In the example of a jhanas person, eating a rock candy, which tastes bitter, and that's the chanting.
Yeah.
If you know you're sick, then you'll keep taking it.
You'll take it, yeah. Yeah.
That's if you don't know you're sick.
Yeah, then you stop. Yeah, or you won't start in the first place. Yeah, that's it. In other words, at the beginning, it's automatic that it's going to be you're doing it because you're supposed to do it because it's good for you. But as doing it, if the desire, the ultimate desire, is to have that pure taste for the name, that will come as you become purified.
So,
yeah, so you keep taking the medicine of the chanting at the same time as then that natural sweetness will manifest automatically. But you have to keep taking the medicine. And associating then with those who have a taste for the name. Like that. Yeah. Yes.
You say something very interesting. Can you please find it a little bit? Sometimes we as neophytes, maybe we think that Vrindavan is a place where there's a lot of frustrated husbands and unattended children.
Yes. What about the CEO?
Yeah.
Women's liberation.
You were saying,
hey, we can start the husbands,
neglected cowherd boys.
Yes, the neglected cowherd men's.
Dirty reform committee.
But it's complete happiness in relation to the
What also has to be understood is that in Gokul, then it's manifest. The husbands are manifest. See, these husbands are not necessarily devotees. I mean devotees meaning jivas. These are expansions of yoga maya to create the atmosphere. Because existence potency, in other words, they're sat. They're expanding from sat. They're not expanding from chit like we are. Yeah, we're expansions of the chit shakti. They're expanding the sat shakti, so therefore they have all their personalities that create the environment. So it doesn't matter, because it's just they're only there to manifest the mood. So it's not that there's a problem in them being neglected, because in Goloka they don't even manifest them. Just the mood is there, but it's created in such a way that they never even have to meet them or deal with them. They just don't exist. But they exist by mood, by bhava. You know? But in Gokul, then they actually exist. Like that. So there are those who are the specifically the devotees, who are either the internal potency or the jivas. But then there'll be all these expansions to create the environment. And if you have jivas, does that make some sense? Like that. Or it may be they're there, but they don't. Because that's why they marry into another village. The gopis marry into the village of Yavat. And that is run by, what is it, Govardhan, right? Govardhan Mazumdar? Govardhan. Yeah, so he's the head there, just like you have Nanda Maharaj is the head of Nandagam. And Vrishabhanu is the head of the gopas at Varshana. There's that Yavat, that's a whole nother group of cowherd men, headed by Govardhan Mala. Govardhan Mala. So then, I think that's what the Bengalis call them. They call them.
Iron Ghosh.
Okay.
Arjuna is the father of Ramananda.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So then, that's a whole different village. And so that whole village has a different connection and all that. You don't hear much about it because it's only a place where that makes your connection to the Vrindavan scene. You have to have a place you're from, who you are. You have to have an identity like that. Otherwise, how's your rasa? How can they ask you where you're from? Who's your father? Who's your husband? You know, like this, which is the natural interaction, you know, social interaction, unless you have. So therefore, it's manifest in that way, you know, so that can be done. And then, fortunately, it's halfway in between Barshan and Nandigaon, so it makes life easy, you know. And then I think, what do you call it?
Then,
yeah, but it's kind of like the distance between the two is similar. It's not so.
Very close. Some cases in between Barshan.
Yeah. Oh, okay, on that side. Okay. But, okay, yeah. It's close to Nandigaon, but the distance from Sanket to Nandigaon and Yavat to Nandigaon is about the same. Yeah, so it means when they have to meet, it's always about the same distance. Grantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhakti Vrinda ki, Vainita Gaura Prenchari ki.
Is there any Bhakti Lady Bhura Swami ki?
A small question. Someone who has taken Diksha and the guru has gone away, is it compulsory that he has to take Diksha again?
He has to take Siksha. That's compulsory. Compulsory is he has to find someone as a Siksha guru who he accepts in the same way of surrender as a Diksha guru. But the ritual of reinitiation is not important at all. Because it's a samskara. Once it's done, it's done. You can redo it. There's nothing wrong in redoing it. But you don't have to. But the siksha aspect, that's compulsory. You have to have someone who you are working for. Because then they will see that you are doing what you're doing properly. Otherwise, you may say, I'm doing fine. You're not.
Your attitude towards that guru is the same whether it's Diksha or Shiksha.
Yes. Because technically, on that level, there's no difference between Diksha and Shiksha. That attitude and that surrender and all that is the same.
So, I don't appreciate it. But actually, at that time, it was not very clear. Some
were
saying he's already connected.
Yeah, it was not that. But don't worry about it. The point is that if the person is who you took, then after Bhagawan is still functioning and all that, then it's working. If they're not, then you just find those persons you trust. At least one has to be prominent. There could be many, but one has to be prominent. And then you just go on from there. So doing your puja and all that, you just keep the picture of who's the siksha guru. You don't keep the picture of the siksha guru because they're not functioning in that capacity. They're not your connection. Though they've technically connected you by the process of the samskara, who's keeping that connection alive is the siksha guru. So the dynamic form is more important than the other forms, you know, means the end like that.
Actually, I took a reinitiation from Bhakti Swami Prabhupada, but I didn't change my name. I think one of the names is not Yogi Mala. And then after a few years, I asked him, because he actually gave me a Brahmin initiation. Did you give me second or also first? So I said, both.
Yeah, I mean, some like to do, some gurus prefer reinitiation, some it's okay, and some don't bother. But
So you just have to be, because they're the person you want to take shelter of, that you should be on the same page.
And I had some help because also he said to another that we are already connected.
So it just depends. It depends. So then for you, then he did like that.
Thank you much.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So that's why I'm here. I'm